Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst at friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Taylor Tarter of Fantrax, Fantasy Pros, Pitcher List. He's on the Fastball Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I mean, where don't you work, Taylor?
I'll be trimming it down.
Okay.
Sooner than later, but baby on the way. So
yeah,
going to be trimming this down pretty soon.
Yeah, you've got a lot on your plate and then a child on the way.
Yeah.
Let everybody know where you can reach on social media and then talk about what you do at all these places.
Sure. I'm at Taylor Tarter and Fastball Pod on Twitter, Fastball Fantasy Baseball on Instagram. DMs are open on both for questions, anything. On the show, I focus a lot on like data-driven stuff, trying to make sabermetrics friendly for like the everyday player.
Hey, that's a valuable tool right there. I'm not as good at doing that for people, but I'm glad you are. You are newer in the industry. What's it been like, working at so many different places?
It's actually been nice, like getting to know a lot of people through Twitter and through these different, jobs that I'm doing. It's a bit of a grind right now, but, hoping it'll grow into something better.
Awesome. Definitely go, give Taylor a follow on that Twitter machine and go follow all of his work. We are going to be previewing the Washington Nationals today. And as Taylor and I were kind of just briefly talking, not the most exciting team for fantasy, but some good nuggets. And especially for those of you who may play in a few deeper leagues, when we start behind the plate, where there is kind of an interesting nugget, a guy who is a former top prospect, had his kind of first full year in the majors last year. And a little disappointing, I think, for most people, and it's Keibert Ruiz. Do you think he takes a step forward this year, or is he kind of is who he is?
I think he can. Like he was known in the Nationals community as more of like an average guy, not really a power hitter at all. So I wouldn't expect that. But he has his limitations. He has really bad hard contact, but he drives and pulls the ball, which is something that we in the fantasy world, that's kind of what we like to see. That's what hitters are supposed to do. So hopefully, you know, his bat X projections look good, 12 home runs, 256. I think he can probably hit better than 256. I think where he's going is pretty reasonable. 184 in NFBC, right behind Cal Raleigh, who I like a lot.
Yeah, I think he's kind of what's a good way of putting this? He's a high floor, low ceiling kind of guy,
definitely.
Right? Like, you know, especially if you're looking for a second catcher that's not gonna hurt you. Yeah, like he's fine. I think there are some people that think there's another level to him, and I mean he's still so young. There obviously could be, but until he raises that launch angle, like I just don't know that the power is really gonna play very far. And like you said, like the exit velocity numbers look not great. So he's fine. He's not usually a target of mine, but more of a fallback option is my C2, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I think he's one of those. I think a lot of the people we're going to talk about on the Nats are better real baseball guys than fantasy baseball guys, and Ruiz is definitely one of those. Like you said, he would be great as like your second catcher in a two catcher league. But he's a good fallback plan. If your number one gets injured and he's out on the wire, he's a good snag. He won't like kill you in average, but he's not going to add a whole lot of pop.
Yeah. The backup there is Riley Adams. Do we care at all?
No. He was below the Mendoza line last year. I don't think there's a lot there. If anything, I think that they're going to turn to prospect Israel Pineda, who he's been in the Nats system since 2017. He's got a little less swing and miss than Riley Adams, but he only has 40 plate appearances above AA. So it would take a lot for him to get the call, but I don't think Riley Adams is going to do a whole lot.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Dom Smith is another one of these guys that, like, some people in the fantasy industry that have, like, always have, like, this really soft spot for, always, you know, thought, hey, you know, this is Dom Smith's year. It's Dom Smith's year. We've never really had Dom Smith's year. But he signed a deal with the Nationals. It's a major league deal. He even said in an interview after he signed that he was led to believe that the first base job is his and that he's going to play every day. Are you interested in Dom Smith?
I don't think that this is Dom Smith's year. Okay. Again, he for his career, he's got pretty decent, like, hard contact, you know, metrics. But I kind of see him as like a really, really, really deep, type of first baseman. Like if you get super desperate, or like in like a DC, if you need him at the very back end, that's the time I would be drafting him. They definitely want to keep him out of the outfield. So, I see him kind of splitting time at like first base and maybe DH, so they can like rotate Meneses in there. But I don't know. I'm not a Dom Smith guy. I don't think this is his year at all.
Yeah, I tend to be with you. I think in like deeper formats, like a DC or something like that, he makes sense because it seems like he is going to get to like 500 plate appearances. But it really feels like this is just maybe another version of like Eric Hosmer, like without really the stolen base potential that Eric Hosmer had at one point in his career. He's another low launch angle guy. It's a lot of ground balls. He makes contact, like, you know, inside the zone, like, but it's not hard contact. And so you can't expect, even with full-time playing time for him, to even get to like 20 home runs. Like, I think like even just a rosy projection is probably like 17 home runs and a 260 batting average, which it just doesn't really play in fantasy.
It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. But at first base, it's like, meh, it's really kind of bland.
Yeah.
Luis Garcia is a former top prospect, still very, very young. Playing second base. It seems like this is finally going to be the year where the job is his. Are you interested in Luis Garcia?
Yeah, this is one Nats player that I am interested in. So he had 377 plate appearances last year and had a 275 average and hit 7 home runs. And the one thing that like scares me a little bit is a really high, like over 50% ground ball rate. And he's another kind of bad launch angle guy. I think 10 to 15 home runs, mid 50s runs in RBI, 260s average, and maybe gets a couple, you know, a handful of steals. I think there's value there, and should get a ton of opportunity at second base.
Yeah. Unfortunately, like, he reminds me so much of like Jonathan Scope. Which, like, Jonathan Scope's had some useful fantasy seasons, but he doesn't walk. He might give you a handful of bags, but, like, you're really, like, kind of hoping for, in a full season, you know, like, maybe 20 home runs, probably not 20 home runs, though, and a handful of stolen bases and, like, a 260 batting average. Like, I think that plays better at second base than it does, like, for Dom Smith at first base. But it's still, like, it's not super interesting. And I think... And maybe there's more coming from him because he is so young. I think people forget that he's just 22 years old. Will turn 23 in May. So, like, he's still super young and could definitely get better. I just don't know that it's going to be really fantasy goodness because of the profile.
I bet he's one of the most added and dropped players next season. He had like a really amazing hot streak at one point last season. He was batting over 300, doing really well, and, you know, kind of dropped off. And I think that's gonna happen again across a full season. And we're going to be enticed because he has been like a well-known prospect. But I think like people are going to get tired of him not hitting home runs at a certain point and not stealing a ton. And he's going to be that off and on guy that we're going to add for 2 weeks, drop for 2 weeks, add for 2 weeks, drop for 2 weeks, the whole season.
So this is exactly like Jonathan Scope.
Then. Oh, yeah.
Pretty much what we've been doing for Jonathan Scope his whole career. A guy who is very interesting on the Nationals offense, because there's not a ton of interesting guys on the offense, especially, is C.J. Abrams. C.J. Abrams, a former top five prospect, was a huge part of the Juan Soto trade. And it looks like he is going to have every day at bats at shortstop this year. I think there is power in there. I don't know if we see it unlocked this year. We know there's speed, and he showed a pretty good hit tool in the minor leagues. Are you drafting C.J. Abrams this year?
Maybe. So projections, most of the projection systems on Fangraphs have him going 10 home runs, somewhere around 10 home runs or so, 15 steals or so, and anywhere from like a 240 to a 260 average. And there's definitely value there. I just don't know if I'm going to target him unless it's like a super deep league. He's another guy to me on the Nats that's like a better real life player than he is valuable for fantasy. I don't know. I'm not all in. I'm like maybe like 1 foot in the door.
I'm a big fan. I'm not gonna lie. I think these kind of players that are former top prospects that are still extremely young and didn't succeed in their first go around. He just turned 22 at the end of the 2022 season, get unnecessarily buried in the fantasy industry, right? These are guys that people were like, I think Jared Kelnick is a even greater example this year for the Mariners. But Abrams was a surefire top five prospect. You had to have him. You had to add him when he got called up. And now people are like, yeah, he's not very good. Like, he's 22 years old and he's just barely, he skipped AAA, to come up to the majors, last year because of Tatis not being there, and then, struggled, got sent back down, came back up. I think there is, I know there's a good hit tool in there, and I do think he could legitimately hit 260, 270 this year, with that becoming higher as he kind of progresses throughout his career. And if he hits higher this year, I wouldn't be surprised either. We know he's got speed. We know he can run. He had an 80 grade speed score coming out of the minor leagues. We're going to have shorter bases. And I think there's power. I do. I think there's power in there. Like I said, I don't know if this is the year where the power is going to come out and play or anything, but if he can get to 10 home runs in a full season, I think he can steal 30 bases.
Wow.
And, he's a guy that the question becomes, will he walk at all in the majors? Yeah. He's not been a guy we saw last year at the majors between the Padres and the Nationals, only walked 1.7% of the time. He was only walking 5% of the time, 5 to 6% of the time in the minor leagues. So if he's not going to walk, he's got to make contact. I like him in your 15 team leagues as kind of a fallback option at shortstop. I'm going to draft now.
Like a field guy.
Yeah, I'm going to draft right now where I literally pushed the limits of how far you could go without drafting a second baseman or a shortstop.
I think I saw that on Twitter.
Yeah, and so 3 out of the last 4 rounds in this league, I think from rounds 15 to round 19, I took Bryson Stott, I took C.J. Abrams, and I took Ha-Seong Kim. I just okay, now's the time, grabbing all my, all the guys. It was probably poorly built roster construction, but he's going to play. The Nationals have no reason not to let him play every day. I think he will hit for average, or at least a halfway decent average. And I think he's going to run. So, you know, for those of you, especially playing in roto leagues, it makes a lot of sense to kind of take that gamble. If you're playing in like a points-based league, especially one where you get, you know, points for walks, he may, you know, and stolen bases aren't worth as much. He's probably not going to figure into your plans at all. Yeah,
look elsewhere.
So, yeah.
What would make me feel a lot better about him is if, like, in spring training and in, like, in the early parts of the season, if he starts hitting the ball harder, and if he shows, like, he had a 43.8% chase rate last year, which is, like, really, really high. If he can drop that and start hitting the ball harder, then I'm way, way more in.
Yeah, I think that's going to be hard for someone like him to do unless he really wants to try to walk, right? Like, I mean, the reason his chase rate is so high is because his swing rate is so high, right? And so, like, that's going to take someone from the organization, like, sitting him down and going, okay, we really need to see what your, you know, eye at the plate is. Because right now he has a hard time discerning, you know, especially on off speed and breaking stuff, like what's in the zone and what's not in the zone.
Yeah. As a team last year, this is one of the things I look at on my podcast when we do like a streamer section, and we look for the teams with the most strikeouts, with the batters striking out, and target those teams. And the Nats for almost the entire season were one of the most disciplined teams. So not striking out, walking, you know, more than a lot of teams. So hopefully, you know, that can translate over to him, you know, with him up for a full season, you know, hopefully that like mentality kind of rubs off a little bit.
Yeah. Let's talk about Jaime Candelario, who is picked up by the Nationals after the Tigers kind of let him go. Candelario, another one of these guys that people in the industry have had like this soft spot for. I've never really understood the love and hype for Jaime Candelario. Do you think he can find anything in Washington?
I think so. I think there's something there. I mean, he's going at 550 is his NFBC ADP. So he's basically free. And I think he's definitely worth a dart throw. He was pretty good in 2021. He had more than 600 plate appearances, 16 home runs, 75 runs, 67 RBI, and a 271 average. He was really bad in 2020 with a 217 average. He didn't hit 13 home runs, 49 runs, 50 RBI. Decent, but 217 average. Very, very bad. And I kind of like was looking into him. So he struck out more in 2022 and he walked less. His line drive rate dropped from 26% to 18%. His barrel and hard hit rates dropped for the third time in 3 years, and his chase rate went up. So not lots of not very good trends, but I still think there's like something valuable there. Projections have him going between like 15 to 17 home runs, 238, 241 average. I think he could sit like at the higher end of that home run projection. And I think he can do a bit better than a 241 batting average. I think maybe like a 250, 255. And, you know, third base is very, very shallow. It didn't get any better this year. So a guy going at pick 550, absolutely worth a dart throw.
Yeah. Especially like in your DC leagues or like,
oh, really, yeah,
you know, deeper mix leagues. And he's going to play, like, you know, as much as I've had a soft spot in my heart for Carter Kieboom, it seems like that experiment is probably over at this point.
Oh, yeah.
I don't expect a lot from him. The one thing I will add to kind of what you said, because I agree with a lot of what you said, is that he's leaving Comerica, which has been one of the worst places to hit for power, and going to Washington, which is over the last few years, though it didn't play that way last year necessarily, it's been a much better place for power. And who knows, like, does he try to change how he approaches things knowing, hey, I can actually get the ball out of the yard? Because he feels like he's one of these guys that has what I like to call fence scraping power, which means, like, in some places, it's going to be just enough to get, you know, like Ryan Mountcastle-ish, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
In some places, it's going to be, like, you know, just enough to get it over the fence. But in places like Comerica and now, like, the new walls at Camden for Ryan Mountcastle, it's not enough power to get out of the park. So moving to a place like the Nationals may actually make him change his approach a little bit. Maybe he raises the launch angle a little bit, and maybe he does hit for more than 17 home runs. You know, so I think, yeah, deeper leagues, someone to keep an eye on, shallower formats, on your watch list kind of guy.
Like, Philly's a pretty good hitter's park, too.
Yeah, yeah, you get Washington, you get Philly, you know, even Atlanta, though Atlanta's better for lefties. Oh, Candelaria's a switch hitter, so. And then Mariners, Mariners and Mets kind of park sucks, but. Get to play in Nationals Park. You know, it's not a bad spot for him to end up. Do we care about any of the? Oh, actually, we do care about Joey Meneses. Joey Meneses was a guy who kind of burst on the scene out of nowhere last year. I had never even heard his name pronounced until I was watching a Nationals game. I go, oh, that's how you pronounce that. I mean, he came out of nowhere, had an amazing run at the end of the season last year. How much of it is legitimate and how much of it is going to be like Frank Schwindel and just fade away?
So I actually interviewed Jesse Dougherty, who's the Nats beat writer for the Washington Post for my podcast. And his take is that it's legit. He said he was great at hitting mistakes last year from opposing pitchers, and like that's his game. And one of the other things he said was that like pitchers might start to figure him out this season, but he's a smart enough hitter to be able to figure them out too. So I'm all in on Joey Meneses. Like he had a almost a 10% barrel rate and about a 47% hard hit rate, the same barrel rate as Nate Lowe, and his hard hit rate would have been fourth among first basemen ahead of Paul Goldschmidt if he had qualified. So those are comps that I like a lot. Pulls the ball really well, drives the ball really well. You know, he had a crazy high BABIP last season and that boosted the average. So 250, 260 average, I think he could touch 30 home runs if he gets the full, you know, the full season, if he's getting close to 600 at bats. I like him. I'm in.
Oh, you are high on him.
Oh yeah.
that's interesting. Okay. So I am, and maybe I have like a little bit of PTSD from drafting Frank Schwindel on so many teams, because I just worry that this is what Joey Meneses is. A guy who came up, you know, in his, you know, early 30s or late 20s, and, you know, kind of came out of nowhere, but he doesn't even show like the good underlying skills we saw from Frank Schwindel. He's got like league average contact, swings outside of the zone 30% of the time, which is, it's not bad or anything, but like, it's not good either. It's not like a guy who like lights up the Statcast numbers. They're fine. They're not like bad necessarily either. I'm just so worried that like he is going to get figured out. He will play, and the price isn't like prohibitive. So like, it's not you know, it's not like he's going so early in a draft. That like, if you take him and he ends up like just being god awful, that you're like, you're not losing your fantasy league because you draft Joey Meneses.
No. And he's going almost identically to Brandon Drury right now in NFBC. Brandon Drury's ADP is 197.63 and Joey Meneses is 197.89. So they're basically going exactly at the same spot. And I think that they're, the attitude that we have about them is probably exactly the same, right? That they had this like amazing season. And then I think we saw Brandon Drury kind of like fall off, not fall off the cliff, but he like
he definitely started, regressed.
That's he hard, regressed. Yeah. And I think we're going to see that same thing with Meneses into this season, but I'm not drafting him to hit like 300 like he did in those limited at bats last season.
Like you mentioned, like his BABIP was 371.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
His XBA was like 267. Like the average part is definitely going to regress. I think the question for me becomes how far does it regress, you know, and how much power is actually in that bat? I tend to think he's kind of a low 20s homer guy with like a 250, 260 batting average, which again is fine, but definitely not what I think people who are all in are hoping for. So I think got a little bit of disagreement there, but. We'll have to talk at the end of the season and see where we're at. Yeah.
I'm also a Mets fan too, so I might be biased.
Oh, there we go. Okay, now we get the truth out. Okay, I'm glad you're doing that preview.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, Vargas. Do we care at all?
I don't think so. I don't know how they're gonna work him into the lineup. So. I don't know. If an injury happens to a middle infielder, I think he could have some value, but that's the only like time I'm even considering him. One thing I looked at for his whole career, he has 600 plate appearances. And if you treat it as one season, a good thing about him is that he would have been his career contact rate would have been 12th in baseball last year, and his career swinging strike rate would have also been 12th. So good contact hitter, but he's got a, you know, he has to have a role on the team, and I don't think he has like a starting role on the team right now.
Yeah, and like he does make a ton of in zone contact. The problem is a lot of it ends up on the ground. He's got like almost 50% ground ball rate. He's definitely someone I'm keeping an eye on. If there's an early injury, if he is playing more than, you know, maybe we thought, like right now, it just isn't a spot for him. I think if they hadn't signed Dom Smith and Meneses was looking like he was going to be the everyday first baseman and they had like an open DH spot, then I'd be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. That's where Vargas ends up. So I think maybe, you know, you can take a really late gamble on him in a DC, or kind of just keep an eye on, you know, like spring training and kind of early season. Is he playing? Is he someone I might want to rotate in my roster?
Yeah, I mean, he's going at 7:48. And
yeah, he's literally free, yeah. all right, let's move on to the outfield. Will Victor Robles ever be a thing again?
Nope.
Oh, you hurt me.
He had nine barrels last year, and if he had been a qualified hitter, it would have been tied for fifth lowest. I just don't see it. I've been watching him for the last, you know, 5 years, however long he's been in the league, and he's a good defender, but defense doesn't play in fantasy, so no, thank you.
Yeah. So there's a guy he's not in the industry. He's a high stakes player. An FBC Hall of Famer, and he goes on Twitter at Gecko Industries. Really, really good fantasy player. He had tweeted out last week, I think it was, Victor Robles increased his exit velocity from 82.4 in the first half to 87.2 in the second half. It's the second highest increase between first half exit velocity and second half exit velocity in the majors. Like I don't want to fall for this again, because I feel like I'm Charlie Brown trying to kick a football with Victor Robles. But we know there's speed. We know there's a little bit of pop in there. He hit 267 last year. Or sorry, 263 last year. I'm a little bit interested, especially because, you know, you're now no longer having to pay, like, you know, a ridiculous price that we used to pay. I mean, he's literally going, like, at pick 500 in draft champions since Christmas. I'm a little bit interested. You're talking about a guy that, if he gets to play every day, which I assume in this lineup, he's going to play close to every day. And he makes just the slightest of changes. Like, he's a guy who could hit 260, 250 maybe, and steal 30 bases.
So
am I crazy? Am I Charlie Bradding this?
Well, so what I will say is he has hit above 255 once in his career. It was in his second season when he had 66 plate appearances. His averages since then, since 2020, 220, 203, 224.
Yeah, and let me correct myself. I did say that he hit 260 something. He did not hit 260. He hit 224 last year.
Yeah. So, and his projection is 224 to 227, depending on where you're looking. If I'm taking a low average guy, I'm taking a low average guy that's going to hit me 30 home runs. You know, I'm taking a Matt Chapman or something like that. I'm out on Victor Robles. I don't think I've ever been in on Victor Robles.
You know, and you probably should be. Listen to Taylor. Don't listen to me on this one. This is clearly wish casting and my own bias. What about Lane Thomas? He's, you know, going to play every day, probably lead off. Do we care about Lane Thomas?
I think he's interesting. I mean, so I found this nugget last season that in 2021, he had the highest WRC plus versus left-hand pitchers in the second half. And last year, he hit 253 against left-handed hit pitchers. I think he fits better in like an NL only league or like a deep league where he's going to be like your fourth or fifth outfielder, that sort of thing. If he gets streaky, he'll be a good waiver add. Deeper leagues, I'm interested. The shallower leagues, maybe a 10 team league, I'm a little more hesitant to draft him.
I know it's like a really small sample and stuff, you know, because it's a one season kind of home road splits. He was awful at home last year. Like, he was pretty darn good. He had a 129 WRC plus on the road and a 58 WRC plus at home. Like, I wonder why.
It's a weird split.
That's a really weird split. Like, I don't understand that. You know, and he's obviously better against lefties than righties, but like, even those splits are like much, much closer together. Like, I wonder what it is about Nationals Park last year. I wonder if he had a new baby, and when he was home, he wasn't sleeping at night because the baby was crying. And then on the road, he was like sleeping like a baby.
I'll have to look into that.
This is my hypothesis as a father who's been through this. You definitely sleep better on the road when you have a baby.
I wonder if he like falls into a platoon with somebody like a Corey Dickerson. So his projections are like very wide right now, like 15 to 20 home runs, 8 to 10 steals, mid 230s in average. I think he can, if he stays consistent, I think he can hit like the higher ends of that. I think he can do better in average. He had 241 last season. I don't know why I think that's like the lower end of what we're looking at. I think he has some value. He's got pop. He'll steal you a couple bags, but I kind of see him more as like I said, like a fourth or a fifth type of outfielder than somebody I'm like relying on for like significant in a significant role on my team.
I found the issue with the home road split. He had a 216 BABIP at home and a 344 BABIP on the road.
That'll do it.
Yeah, so that explains quite a bit. Pretty, you know, close to virtually the same strikeout rates. walked a little bit more at home. But yeah, that Babbitt on the road versus at home, big differences there. So probably finds, you know, somewhere in the middle, you know, which would make him around, you know, a league average player. A little bit of pop, a little bit of speed. Maybe there, you know, maybe you know, gets hot and can do a little bit more with that. But he's going to lead off, which even on a bad team, these are going to score a fair amount of runs. So I don't mind Lane Thomas at all. All right, rest of the outfield: Corey Dickerson, Alex Call, Stone Garrett. Do we care at all?
Not really. It's an interesting outfield because none of them are really good, and so I don't know how they're gonna align the outfield. Out of all of them, Stone Garrett is the most interesting to me. I think he has the most chance of mattering in fantasy. He was in Miami's minor league system and Arizona's minor league system before coming to the Nats, and in 2019 he hit 14 homers and stole 15 bags, 243 average. That was in Double A for Miami. Then in 2021 in Double A for Arizona, had 25 home runs, 17 stolen bases, and a 280 average, which is very nice. And then last season in AAA for Arizona, 28 home runs, 15 steals, 275. So, you know, I like that. I will see how that translates, if it translates. But he had a very short stint in the majors last year, 84 plate appearances for Arizona, 4 home runs, 3 steals, hit 276. 9.5% barrel rate, 49% hard hit rate. Those are pretty good numbers. He chases the ball a lot, and his contact rate is very low, like 66% low. And his swinging strike rate is 18%, which is also very, very bad. But, you know, he's like a late pick in like super, super deep leagues, and in like a 10-team league on like ESPN or whatever, I'm throwing them on my watch list and waiting and seeing what happens.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that you look at kind of just the straight numbers, you know, fantasy numbers, and you go, hey, man, this guy's really interesting, right? He's got power, he's got speed, he hit 276 last year. But then you look under the hood and you go, oh, this is not good at all. You know, a 370 BABIP is the reason why he hit 276. Yeah. His XBA was 198.
Yeah.
You know, he's got among the worst zone contact in baseball. Swings outside of the zone a lot. The 18.5% swinging strike rate. So for those who like watch, it's kind of like a quick, dirty way of like figuring out, hey, what's someone's strikeout rate supposed to be? You just double the swinging strike rate and you go 18.5%. Oh, yeah, that's like 37% strikeout. Like, that is not going to end well. I think if he was anywhere else, I would completely ignore him. But on the Nationals, he could play. Like, they really don't care at this point.
So, yeah, that's the thing, you know.
And, like, for those of you, like in deeper leagues and you want to stream a guy who's hot, there are going to be moments where Stone Garrett is hot, and he's going to be worth picking up.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the Nats players, I think, are going to be guys you just want to throw on your watch list. Like, you're not going to draft them in a lot of leagues, but you're going to want to have them on your watch list just in case they, you know, they get hot for those 2.5-3 week stints. You know, they could be valuable for like in like small quantities.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move into the starting pitching and talk about Josiah Gray. All the talent in the world. Unfortunately, that doesn't prevent you from giving up a ton of home runs. Will Josiah Gray ever turn into an ace? And what do you think about him for this year?
I don't think he'll turn into an ace necessarily. Maybe like a third starter. The home run rate, home run per nine rate was 2.3, which is like insane.
Yeah.
You look at a guy, I don't know, like a Garrett Cole, and it's like one or less. right? Just for reference. And then he had an 18.5% home run to fly ball rate, which is also really high. And like, for me, I measure that against like the league average, which ranges from like 10% to 12% year to year. So those things tell me like maybe it's a little bit of bad luck that those balls are leaving the park. But also, you know, of course, it's partially partially his fault too. But he does some good things. He had an 80% left on base rate last year, so he has the ability to strand runners. His slider last year had a 189 batting average against and a 179 expected batting average against, a 38% whiff rate and a 28% put away rate. So really nasty slider. And his curveball was really good too. 185 batting average against, 195 expected, 32% whiff rate, 21% put away. So he's got some pitches in there that can get batters out. I think it's about location. And then also getting those, working in those other pitches in a way that like makes that, that benefits those other pitches. So maybe it's like pitch sequencing, that's an issue, you know, location, but I think there's ways. I think the issues that he has are fixable. And I think, I don't know if this is the year, but he's interesting to me. He's has pretty decent K9 rate. Has to cut down walks, has to cut down home runs. As long as he keeps doing the other stuff, that's good. But walks and home runs, got to cut him down.
I'd almost wish the Nationals would do what the Blue Jays did with Robbie Ray and say, listen, your stuff's hard to hit. Stop trying to go outside the zone with it. Like, just come into the zone. Because at least if you're going to give up the home run, make sure it's a solo shot and not a three-run shot because you've put two guys on,
yeah,
you know, already, you know, via the free pass. So I'd like to see him, because, I mean, his zone rate was like 39%. Like, I'd love to see him get to like 45%. He had, if you look at starting pitchers or pitchers in general, but 140 innings or more, he had the highest home run rate in the majors. And it wasn't particularly close. Like, you're talking 2.3 homer per nine, mm-hmm, for Josiah Gray. The second highest is Sean Manaea, 1.65. Like, that's a, yeah, massive,
that's really difference. Bad.
Like, you know, that is just a massive difference. So, like, if you're going to give up the home run, one, I think that should regress, like, down just naturally a, mm-hmm, little bit. But, like, at least don't give up the walks. Like, you can't do both. You can't give up the homers and the walks. You can give up one or the other and get away with it. So, I love Josiah Gray's stuff. And like I said, like, his two secondaries, like, those are really good pitches. The fastball is just so straight, and like, and guys just tee off on it.
Yeah.
I like to see the fact that they were kind of trying to have him pitch a little backwards last year, where he wasn't like going 50% of the time with the fastball. I think that is the right decision, but he still needs to be more aggressive inside the zone, I think. He's a guy that I think in Roto he can be really difficult because you just never know when to start him. In head-to-head leagues, though, especially like points-based formats where like strikeouts can, and innings can be so useful, you know, and like, hey, he might kill you one week, but he's not going to kill you every week. Like, I actually don't mind him there as kind of like a high-risk, high-reward kind of option.
I think if you build the right like pitching staff around him on your fantasy team, then like he can be really valuable, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, like one of the, like, if you play in head-to-head categories league and you're okay with like punting your ratios, mm-hmm, like he makes a lot of sense.
Oh yeah.
So like, you know, if you want to load up on the Josiah Grays, the Robbie Rays, the like guys who get really high strikeouts, but like they're probably going to torture ratios at times. Like he makes a lot of sense in a league like that. Is Patrick Corbin ever going to be good again?
I don't think so. And it's very sad. So I have a little Patrick Corbin nugget here. So if Patrick Corbin pitched 10 more innings, he would have qualified and he would have had the worst ERA in baseball. It would have been the second time in a row he finished with the worst ERA in baseball, and the third time in three consecutive seasons, he'd be among the six worst ERAs in baseball, which is really bad.
That's not a good stat for Patrick Corbin.
No. And so, like, you know, we like to look at like all the expected stats, right? So his ERA was 6.31. His expected ERA was 6.41. But if you look at like XFIP and XSierra, those were in the fours. So, you know, there may have been some bad luck there, but I don't know. He's not striking out people like he used to. He walks a lot of batters. I don't know. It pains me to watch as a Nats
fan. I bet, yeah.
And knowing he's making so much money, so much money.
Yeah, there's just very little redeeming value in Patrick Corbin at this point. So I'm sorry.
I have another nugget here.
Oh, nice.
So all four of his pitches had a batting average against of 300 or more. And the lowest expected batting average was on his slider at 258. But all the other expected batting averages were also 300 or more.
That's, yeah. I'm sorry, man. I'm really sorry.
It's rough. It's really rough. And then Steven Strasburg, too. Who knows if he's ever going to pitch again. Like, it's been a bad couple of years after the World Series, which was amazing. But it's been a bad couple of years after that.
Yeah. Are you drafting Strasburg at all?
Oh, no, I don't know if he's going to pitch this year. So,
yeah, I don't either.
And if he does,
we have no idea.
I'll wait and see. Okay. I'm happy to wait and see.
What about Trevor Williams?
Yeah, I'm interested, but like late, like on a, really only in like super, super deep leagues. He was basically promised a starting role after starting 9 games for the Mets last year, but he's been a starter most of his career. So he had a 3.21 ERA last season, struck out 8.5 batters per 9. His left on base rate has gone up every year for the last 4 years. And he has a really nasty, fastball, sinker, slider combo. And all three of those pitches have a 20% or higher put away rate. And his slider has a 36% whiff rate too. So he's got a good pitch mix. He's interesting. We'll see.
Yeah, I think he's interesting, like in a really deep format, kind of as a bench guy, NL only, draft champions, things like that.
He'll be a good streamer.
Yeah, definitely a good streamer. Okay, both Mackenzie Gore and Cade Cavalli, both finished the year on the IL because of injuries. Mackenzie Gore's elbow, which is always scary because of Tommy John, Cavalli, because of his shoulder. Are you drafting either this year?
I think so, but again, it's like probably only in deep league formats. Cavalli has been a high strikeout guy throughout the minors, and that's something that I really look for when I'm drafting pitchers, is I try to find guys that have those high K9 rates, and I don't care so much about like ERA and stuff, you know, the ratios. But him and Mackenzie Gore, I think they're interesting. Mackenzie Gore, his curveball, slider, changeup mix last year all had 31%+ whiff rate. So he's got a lot of swing and miss in his arsenal. He's a high strikeout guy. I don't think many of these pitchers are going to rack up wins. So if you're in wins leagues, I wouldn't count on these guys for that. But yeah, like they're both going around 500, 600 in NFBC. You know, if you're in a deep league, I think that's a great spot to get them. And if like in a shallower league, 10, 12 team league, maybe I'm looking at them as like a streamer, but they're definitely on my radar.
Yeah, they're definitely on my radar. I kind of want to see them both pitch in spring. There's been a little bit of news on Cavalli, that he's penciled into the rotation, that it sounds like he's going to be ready for opening day. There hasn't been much information on Gore, which scares the crap out of me a little bit. So, and because it's an elbow issue, Tommy John is always kind of a fear. Mm-hmm. I just want to see them on the mound and healthy. Are they still throwing at the same velocity that they were? We're close to it. Last year, how do their breaking pitches look good? Are they healthy? If they are, then I will be very interested in them late in my draft as just like a Kyle Wright kind of dart throw.
You know? Oh, yeah. Yeah, guys, look how he turned out.
Exactly. You know? Like, because, I mean, if they suck, you know, or they get injured, they're easy to drop. Where I'm probably not going to draft either of them, he's in a draft champions. Only because you can't drop them.
Right. Right.
You know, and you know, yeah, I know everybody goes, oh, you got 50 rounds. Like, though, you get a lot of injuries throughout the year, and there will be times where you're struggling to find someone on your roster to play. And so, I don't want to invite that kind of injury stuff onto my team. So, as much as I like them and they are going super late, I'm going to wait for March and kind of hope that they're healthy and then maybe take some calculated gambles. Is Kyle Finnegan the closer?
I think so. So him and Tanner Rainey kind of like split last year. I think Kyle Finnegan was out for a bit, if I remember.
Yeah, he got injured in spring training and missed like the first couple weeks.
Yeah, I think that's a job that like I'm kind of waiting until spring training to see like how they're using him. But I would lean Kyle Finnegan as the saves guy. They used him a lot in that role last year. So
yeah, I think he's the guy to start the year. Is there anybody like you would think about if he falters or gets hurt again, something like that?
I mean, Tanner Rainey is the only other name that comes to mind there.
I think Rainey's out with Tommy John.
Oh, then I have no idea who I have no idea who they would use.
I think maybe Hunter Harvey or Carl Edwards Jr. Like, these are not, like, exciting names. So
no, these, nobody I would be, like, you know, going out and being like, ooh, I'm gonna get Hunter Harvey, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know that they offered Sean Doolittle a minor league deal. And as far as I know, he's like back and healthy, and last season he retired the first like 14 or 15 batters he faced before he got injured for the rest of the season. So there might be something there if he stays healthy and they need like a backup guy for closing. But yeah, aside from Kyle Finnegan, I think you're just like throwing darts.
Yeah, and I mean, here's the thing, like you mentioned with the rotation, there's not going to be a lot of wins for this team, so not going to be a lot of saves either.
No,
so,
no.
He's kind of a lower-end closer, too, in a deeper league.
Yes.
All right, Taylor, thank you so much for joining me. This is awesome.
Yeah, man, thank you very much. This was fun. This is great.
I'm even shocked we almost got an hour in, considering how bad this team is. So hopefully everybody enjoyed it. Remind everybody where you can reach on social media, and then plug everything you're doing.
Sure. Taylor Tarter and Fastball Pod on Twitter. My last name is T-A-R-T-E-R, by the way, not like tartar sauce. Mm-hmm. Fastball Fantasy Baseball on Instagram. And like I said, DMs are open on both. Shoot me questions, whatever. I co-host the Fastball Fantasy Baseball podcast with my buddy Matt Kirk. We have weekly episodes out every Wednesday. We're getting beat writers on from different teams. Asking them questions. So tune into all of that. And then look for me on Fantasy Pros, Fantrax, and Pitcherless. And I have a few articles out already for those outlets. So, yeah.
All right. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me at the show, Friends of Fantasy Benefits at gmail.com. Doing these 30-team previews in 30 days here on the podcast. I'm writing daily at Fangraphs. We also got the TGFBI podcast, which will start back up again here probably sometime next month once I'm done with all these 30 team previews in 30 days. For Taylor and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season. Every night I get you on the telephone. We sleep and we talk and we play till the dawn.